What's going on, guys, and welcome to WWE Rivalries. It is Friday, September 4th. Can't believe we're already in September. How crazy is that? I guess in the whole COVID era, we have just kind of surpassed the summer as a whole. But welcome, guys. We have a lot to get into today. As you know, I'm Anthony DeMarco, your host. You can find me at ADeMarco25. I know a few of you have already reached out to me with some potential rivalry ideas, so thank you for that. I know Wakanda Forever on Twitter reached out to me. Thank you for the kind words. And he gave me a few ideas for some future shows that I will certainly keep in the back pocket. And thank you for that, and stay tuned. But for this week, we are going to tackle the best rivalry of all time between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I'm sure you guys are saying, oh, well, no wonder he's circling back to The Rock. He always does. So, yeah, I'm guilty of it this time, but I think this is one that needs to be addressed, that needs to be broken down, as it is two of the biggest megastars in the history of professional wrestling. And I know Matt did do a recap of three-part wrestling nostalgia on each of their WrestleMania matches, their hat trick of matches, their trio of matches, whatever you want to call it. So I asked him about it, if he thought this would be a good idea, seeing on how he already kind of touched on it. He thought it was a great idea. It gave me the go-ahead to really go in depth on each of these matches, how the build and what happened before they even met at WrestleMania. Because this rivalry started back all the way in 1997. But before we get into that, I just want to give you a couple of my thoughts on the current product. I'm not going to do the whole review. As you know, you already have the Raw review, the SmackDown review with the HSP guys. Matt will do his weekend review on Sunday. And Zach does his NXT review. So I won't go too in depth with that. But a few quick hits. Women's Tag Team Championships. I like it with Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax. And to be honest, it has been a long time since I legitimately enjoyed seeing Nia Jax on my television screen, but they found a way. They put her with Shayna Baszler. And, you know, WWE has a history of putting these two misfits as tag teams and it working out. Like, look at the Kane and Daniel Bryan tag team back in 2012, I want to say 2013. It really worked. Team Hell No, that was hilarious. They went on a lengthy run, I want to say over 6 months, eventually dethroned by the Shield. But we saw it with the Bar with Sheamus and Cesaro. Obviously, they became friends after a while. But at the beginning, they were put together by then GM Mick Foley in 2016 as kind of misfits as a tag team. And no, I like it. I think Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax are a great tag team. I hope they hold the belts for a long time. And we are starting to see the slow breakdown of Bayley and Sasha Banks as they're gonna go ahead with it before they get fans back in the stands. And you know what? Obviously, you wanted to do this in front of a live crowd, but at the same time, you don't know when that's going to happen, and you can't drag this on too long. And this has certainly been going on quite a while now. Like, we're pushing a year of Sasha Banks and Bayley. And if you want to go back to their time on Raw and as a whole, this has been almost like a 3-year program. So I think that it's getting to a breaking point with them. And on the Universal Championship picture, well, first, Roman Reigns turns heel. Hooray for that. Long time coming. What, 6 years in the making or whatnot? But you know what? Better late than never. They finally did it. They put him with Paul Heyman, who, man, that guy is one of the best talkers in WWE right now. So he will certainly make up for Roman Reigns' lack of character or lack of strength on the mic, lack of promo, however you want to phrase it. There's very few times that you have put, where they have put, rather, Paul Heyman with someone and it hasn't paid off in spades. Perhaps the only time was with Curtis Axel. That was the only time I can remember where it really did not work out. But look, Roman Reigns is a megastar. Obviously, he has the backing of Vince McMahon and creative, seeing as how he already won back the Universal Championship, which I all but guaranteed last week, so no surprise there, doing it in a very heelish fashion. But you know what? I'm happy they put the strap on him. Good on them. This is a good angle they got going. I'm curious to see if they go full throttle with The Fiend as the top babyface on SmackDown. So stay tuned for that. By all accounts, it seems like that's what they're going to go with it. But SmackDown is a very heel-heavy show right now. By all accounts, Braun Strowman has turned heel. Roman Reigns has turned heel. You have Sheamus as a heel. AJ Styles is a heel. So look, it's going to be interesting where they go with it. Because on the babyface side of things, assuming you have The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, then after that, you have Jeff Hardy, maybe Matt Riddle, Big E. So it's very thin, as Daniel Bryan is still MIA, at least for the time being. So it's, I gotta say, I really like what they're doing with SmackDown right now. For a while, I was leaning more on the Raw side. But a few things on the Raw side, I don't know, I've left a bad taste in my mouth. To be honest, the whole Dominic slash Rey Mysterio angle with Seth, like, I'm getting tired of it. I did not like that the Mysterios got the win on them at Payback. I just think it's run its course and then some. I thought the blow off was going to be at the horror show. Okay, well then Dominic wants to avenge his dad, loses clean to Rey, or as clean as you can in a no holds barred match. That wasn't the blow off, so I'm kind of over that. Was not a fan of Keith Lee beating Randy Orton. I love Keith Lee. I think he's a megastar in the making. But Randy Orton, I'm not going to take the words out of Matt's mouth. He kind of addressed it already. But that was, he was not the guy to take the loss to put over Keith Lee in his first major match on the main roster. You know, he could have gone into maybe a feud with Dolph Ziggler for the time being. Just a relatively big name guy that is there to put over guys like Keith Lee, which he did on Monday Night Raw. But I didn't like the insertion of Keith Lee into the Randy Orton slash Drew McIntyre feud. Just, it does nothing for me. I don't know why. I think that Randy Orton had something great going on with Drew, a great feud. There was no need to insert Keith Lee into that mix. But aside from that, creative has been pretty awesome on both sides. I just think that for the time being, I have preferred SmackDown. And you know what? That's a good thing. That is a good thing when they have us going back and forth and back and forth on which show that they want us to watch more. Because if you go back to 2002, that was the whole idea behind the initial brand split in the first place, to create competition amongst themselves. And I have to say, it has been a long time since I can recall that both brands have had as strong creative as they have had right now. Maybe it's because with no fans, they're just kind of throwing you-know-what at the wall and hoping it sticks. But, aside from Retribution, which I think is just redundant at this point, and, well, Raw Underground, I mean, it seems like it's giving a pretty good platform for the Hurt Business, which I'm a big fan of, but I'm not a huge fan of Raw Underground. Love Shane McMahon, you guys know that. But aside from that, whatever. I mean, I could live with Raw Underground, Retribution. I'm just kind of hoping that they get on with it sooner rather than later, or at least reveal what they're all about, because at this point, like I just said, it is a bit redundant. But enough of that, let's get to why you guys are here, and that is for rivalries, The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. So what do you think about when you hear these two names? I would say the most common fan would say the two best of all time, or at least two of the top five of all time. And then the next thing you'd probably say is the only two guys to main event WrestleMania three times. And that's true. I do believe, because I know Triple H and The Undertaker fought three times at WrestleMania, like we touched on last week, but neither of those main evented any of the shows. And, to be fair, the one of the matches between The Rock and Austin didn't technically main event WrestleMania 19. They were the Raw main event, But the SmackDown main event of Brock and Kurt Angle was, in theory, the actual main event. But from a WWE perspective, if you're the main event of your specific show, you are a main event. So technically, I guess they main evented three times. But let's go back to the beginning when these guys initially first crossed paths. So at this time, it was the fall of 1997. And Stone Cold Steve Austin was the Intercontinental Champion, and he was well on his way to the main event of WWE. At the previous WrestleMania, he had been in the famous submission match, or I Quit match, with Bret Hart, where he went in as the heel, and there's a double turn in there. You know, Bret Hart turned heel, Austin turned babyface, and Stone Cold Steve Austin never looked back as the top babyface of WWE for the succeeding, 4 or 5 years. And what happened initially is that Austin was in the ring and The Rock interrupted him, then Rocky Maivia. And this was when he was first starting to make that change to The Rock. He had just recently joined the Nation of Domination, which, if you guys don't recall, was a African-American group led by Farooq, D'Lo Brown, Kama Mustafa was there. And The Rock was almost like the Randy Orton to Evolution at this point. It was the same kind of idea, Farooq kind of playing the Triple H type role. And what happened here is that The Rock had come out, said that Stone Cold Steve Austin was not the real Intercontinental Champion, that The Rock was the actual Intercontinental Champion. And, you know, playing to the crowd, because the crowd had hated The Rock's initial run as a babyface Intercontinental Champion. And when he came out and saying that he was the best of all time and the crowd loved him, getting just nuclear heat from the crowd who legitimately would chant, "Die, Rocky, die," when he would come out as a babyface. They ended up having a match scheduled later that night on Monday Night Raw. And before The Rock came to the ring, the rest of the Nation attacked Austin, chased him out of the ring. And as Austin fought them off, The Rock stole the Intercontinental Championship. So what ended up happening is that this was kind of a running on program for about a month that culminated at Fully Loaded. Was it Fully Loaded or was it In Your House? One of the two. In December, which Stone Cold Steve Austin won back officially the Intercontinental Championship. So what happened the next night is Vince McMahon came out, said that Austin went too far because Austin stunned a referee. He drove his pickup truck to the ring and, as Vince McMahon said, endangered the WWE. Well, at that time, he would just say the fans. There was no such thing as the WWE Universe. And he demanded that Austin defend the championship against The Rock. And Austin refused, said that he had bigger fish to fry, that his sights were set on the WWF Championship, the World Championship, and relinquished the title into The Rock, subsequently stunning The Rock after basically not playing possum, but, you know, just faking that he was proud for The Rock. He said, you know, hold your championship high, congratulations, champ, this, that, and the other thing. I remember there's this one scene where where Austin actually threw the Intercontinental Championship over the one of the bridges into the lake just to taunt The Rock, and then said, you might as well go swimming for it, throwing flippers in there. That was pretty funny too. But after Austin pretty much awarded the championship to The Rock, as even though he stunned him afterwards, he that was the end of that. He actually gave him the championship. That they didn't cross paths for about a year after this. The Rock went on a lengthy feud, he went on an 8-month reign as champion until August, and Austin won the Royal Rumble, won the WWF Championship from Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 14. And this was kind of the story of where these two guys were at. You know, Austin was ahead of The Rock at this point. Austin was much past the Intercontinental Championship phase, and he alluded to that when he awarded The Rock the championship. Austin was had much bigger fish to fry at this point. But The Rock, even though he was starting his ascent as a top, I guess a top heel, you know, he eventually turned on Farooq, became the leader of the Nation in Domination. Then in the summer of 1998, the Nation had a lengthy program with D-Generation X, which was the initial run-in between The Rock and Triple H. You know, The Rock wasn't quite there yet. And, you know, Shawn Michaels was the top heel at this time in WWF. So by the time that they crossed paths again was the winter of 1999. And what at this point, what had happened is The Rock had finally made his jump to the main event picture. And if you guys don't remember, how that happened was the WWF Championship in the fall of 1998 was vacated after Austin got double chokeslammed by Undertaker and Kane in a triple threat match. And there was a double pin or a false finish, and Vince McMahon forced him to vacate the WWF Championship. And this was right about the time when these two were really getting into a big feud of their own, and Vince McMahon and Stone Cold Steve Austin. So they held the WWF Championship tournament that culminated at Survivor Series. And at this point, The Rock was almost a babyface. He had split apart from the Nation of Domination. The crowd was really getting behind him for just how funny he was on the mic. My God, won the best of all time in that regard. And he was just gaining traction as a top guy. And he main evented Survivor Series in the finals of the tournament with Mankind. And I guess kind of making a wink, wink, nudge, nudge to what happened at the previous Survivor Series, The Rock put Mankind in a sharpshooter and Vince McMahon rang the bell early, paying homage to the Montreal Screwjob with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. And next thing you know, who we thought was a babyface in The Rock locks in arms with Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon, and The Rock is now the leader of the corporation, or at least the face of the corporation, and he becomes the corporate champion. So what happens in the next 3 months is The Rock and Mankind trade championships 2 or 3 times each. They had that infamous I Quit match at the Royal Rumble. Meanwhile, at that very same Royal Rumble, Austin enters number one, basically runs the table. He gets beaten out of the ring and he gets taken off in an ambulance by the corporation. And he actually started that Royal Rumble with Vince McMahon, who came in at number two. But after Vince McMahon lured him into the public bathroom area where the corporation was waiting for him, beat the hell out of him, and he was seemingly done for the night, Vince McMahon sat down on commentary. But near the end of the Royal Rumble, Austin makes his return, starts clearing the ring, and lo and behold, Vince McMahon ends up eliminating Stone Cold Steve Austin and winning the Royal Rumble. So what ends up happening after that is that these two have a match at St. Valentine's Day Massacre in a steel cage match. And this was, I believe the stipulation was that if Stone Cold Steve Austin beat Vince McMahon, he would go on to main event WrestleMania for the WWF Championship. And this was a really good match. It was actually the debut of the Big Show in the steel cage match at St. Valentine's Day Massacre. Vince McMahon in real life broke his coccyx in that match. He got thrown off the top of the steel cage, went through the table. It was a very comical match. I believe the first maybe 10 to 15 minutes was just Steve Austin chasing Vince McMahon around the ring. And it ended up with how it ended was that Vince McMahon was about to lose. Big Show comes through the ring making his debut and throws Stone Cold Steve Austin through the cage to the outside, which ends up with Austin's feet touching the ground and he wins the match. So he main events WrestleMania against The Rock for their first major showdown as the top two guys in the WWF. But here's the thing. While it was by far a great match, and it was a match between these two, This match was more so Vince McMahon versus Stone Cold Steve Austin, with The Rock representing Vince, as it was The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, it was more of a story of the Steve Austin against the corporation than it was Steve Austin versus The Rock himself. And that's why this match, to me, was the least good. Well, that's not very good English, is it? So much for me being a journalism graduate. It was number third in the pecking order. There, that's better English. It was number third in the number three. My God, sorry guys, not too sharp today. Number three in the pecking order among their three matches at WrestleMania, because I just felt, and you know, I could be completely off base with this. I just feel as though it wasn't so much about the feud and the tension between these two guys as it was more just culminating the beef between Vince McMahon and the corporation versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, you know what happens. Steve Austin beats The Rock with the count from special guest referee Mick Foley, or Mankind at that time. And Steve Austin wins the WWF Championship for the second time in his career, or the third time, one of the two. Then post-WrestleMania 15 in 1999... Austin begins a feud with The Undertaker, who was making his ascent as the top heel in the company alongside the Ministry of Darkness and later on the corporate ministry. And they had a lengthy feud that spilled into the summer of 1999. And over this time, The Rock began making his legitimate turn to a top babyface, because at this point, The Rock was just so damn popular that they couldn't hold it off much longer. And that became much more so the case when Steve Austin went down with an injury in the late summer of 1999. And when this happened, it really opened the door for The Rock to take the reins as the top babyface of the WWF in late 99 and into the year 2000. And in the year 2000, The Rock won the Royal Rumble, main evented WrestleMania 16, or WrestleMania 2000 as it was billed, in the Fatal 4-Way match with Triple H. And him and Triple H really highlighted the year 2000. And I kind of touched on this last week. Triple H was the top heel, The Rock was the top babyface, and The Rock held the WWF Championship for much of the year 2000. And around the fall of 2000, Stone Cold Steve Austin makes his return. And when that happened, everyone kind of started to put two and two together that, man, something's going to have to give here. Because you have The Rock, who was as hot as ever as a top babyface, and then you have the returning Stone Cold Steve Austin, who the crowd just picked up right where they left off with how much they adored this guy. And you just knew that organically these guys were going to be on a collision course. And you have to give the WWF credit and Vince McMahon credit for what they did, because they kept these guys away from one another for about 6 months without really crossing paths in an opponent type way. Like, sure, they were both involved in the Armageddon Hell in a Cell match was for the WWF Championship, which was a six-man match, but they each had their own storylines and their own feuds going on. Stone Cold Steve Austin had the three-month, four-month-long program with Triple H, which culminated at No Way Out 2001. And then The Rock had a feud with Rikishi that started at Survivor Series, kind of spilled into December. And then he started a program with Kurt Angle, which ended at No Way Out 2001. And when they finished No Way Out 2001 and The Rock took the WWF Championship away from Kurt Angle, you knew that the stage was being set for the biggest WrestleMania main event of all time, with The Rock defending the WWF Championship versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. And Stone Cold Steve Austin had won the Royal Rumble in 2001 again. So he had already put his stamp on where he was going to be at WrestleMania 17. And what was so great about this build is, like I just said, it was so organic because they did not cross paths. WWF kept them away from each other, kept them away from one another. And they let the crowd kind of want this before telling the crowd they were getting it. They wanted The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. They wanted the top two baby faces of this generation, arguably the two most popular superstars since the days of Hulkamania, to go one-on-one for the biggest prize in the industry. And I gotta tell you, this build, this match, I don't know if WWE now will ever be able to replicate what they did, because it was just something that made it feel like real life, that made it feel like a big deal. And I'm going to give you a little sneak peek. Sorry, guys, can't speak today, on the build and the promo package to that match.
Check out my
Man, does anyone else have goosebumps? My God. I gotta tell you, just hearing the audio does not do it justice. I urge all of you to go watch the promo to WrestleMania 17's main event of The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin. The song My Way by Limp Bizkit. And man, just what a build. And what Austin said at the very end of that program, or that promo, there can only be one WWF champion. That was basically the theme of this match, and that was the metaphor saying there can only be one face of the WWF. There can only be one guy. And these two were legitimately both capable of being the top guy. And to this day, you could make the case for either one of them. I'm a Rock fan, everyone knows that, but from an objective standpoint, you have to be probably side on Stone Cold Steve Austin. I think he's the unanimous best of all time, but The Rock is as close to a second as you can ever get, because the level of stardom both of these guys were at, Austin always a bit higher, and I can say that objectively, always a bit higher and a bit better in terms of crowd reaction than The Rock. The Rock was on a level of his own just as much as Austin was. So, obviously, you guys know what happened. Vince McMahon helps Steve Austin beat The Rock. Austin turns heel. The following night on Raw, the two-man power trip is formed. They beat The Rock down, and The Rock goes away for 4 months on suspension, but in reality, he went away to film his first movie in a leading role, The Scorpion King. The Rock returns in July of 2001 as the head of Team WWF, and as at this point, the invasion angle was in full swing, and Austin had just turned heel once again on Team WWF and was the leader of the alliance. And he was the WWF champion. So The Rock comes back to lead Team WWF. And once again, you have these two going head-to-head at the head of their own respective factions, with Austin playing the heel, which was just never felt right, don't we know? And over the late summer and fall of 2001, The Rock wins the WCW championship, has a kind of feud with Chris Jericho as they're leading Team WWF and they're fighting over that championship. And the same could be said for Kurt Angle and Stone Cold Steve Austin, who main evented Unforgiven 2001. Kurt Angle beat Stone Cold for the WWF championship, and Austin ends up getting it back, and him and Kurt Angle become the leaders of the alliance. And this all comes to a head at Survivor Series 2001, where Austin led Team Alliance and The Rock led Team WWF into the classic 5-on-5 elimination match, winner take all. And don't you know, it comes down to The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, with The Rock getting the win for Team WWF, and therefore ending, mercifully, the invasion angle and Stone Cold Steve Austin's run as a top heel in the company. And after this, what happened was is that they had the Undisputed Championship match, and they went on their both separate ways as both of them lost their respective world championships. The Rock went on to face Hulk Hogan at the succeeding WrestleMania 18. And this began a very lackluster run in the career of Stone Cold Steve Austin. In early 2002 is when things really started to go sideways for Steve Austin, because The Rock, although he wasn't in the main event championship picture anymore, he went on to one of the most historic feuds or iconic feuds with Hollywood Hulk Hogan. And Steve Austin had a match with Scott Hall, one of the most underwhelming Stone Cold Steve Austin programs and WrestleMania matches of all time, which to this day never made sense to me or anyone else. And apparently it didn't make much sense for Stone Cold Steve Austin either, because he ended up walking out of WWF in June of 2002, I want to say. before his King of the Ring qualifying match with a newly signed and newly debuted Brock Lesnar. And we know the story. He was gone off WWF television until early 2003. But at the same time, The Rock had begun his exit to Hollywood. In 2002, he was really starting to wrap up his time as a full-time in-ring competitor for WWE. At this point, they had finally changed to WWE. I remember they had the shirts get the F out, which was pretty funny. Imagine they had something like that today. But we all know that wouldn't fly. But, 2002, the summer of 2002, rather, The Rock actually returns. And he has one last WWE Championship run that ended at SummerSlam 2002 when he dropped the belt to The Rock. To Brock Lesnar. So in late 2002, both of these guys were nowhere to be seen. The Rock's off in Hollywood. Stone Cold Steve Austin is at home in Texas. And WWE is pushing forward without the two faces of their company. In the era of the brand split, with neither of these two guys there to lean on either of the brands. And this is when you really saw guys like Kurt Angle and Triple H and a returning Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker really start to carry the load for WWE. As I mentioned on my episode last week, Undertaker was the workhorse for SmackDown and ditto for Triple H on Raw, who was the inaugural World Heavyweight Champion. And you saw this open the door for guys like Kevin Nash and Chris Jericho and Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Chris Benoit. All these guys got their chances to kind of push into the upper card with the absence of Austin and The Rock. But while 2002 closes with neither of these guys around, 2003 starts with a returning Rock to face Hollywood Hulk Hogan in a rematch. But it wasn't the same Rock that we knew when he left. Comes back with a bald head, a new tattoo on his left arm, and he is in full Hollywood heel mode. And I gotta say, this is one of my favorite versions of The Rock. Because this guy knows how to play a heel, and it had been 4 years since we saw The Rock as a heel. He had been full babyface since late 1999. And it is hilarious to see The Rock as a heel, because when he wants to be a heel, he is as good and as funny as anyone in that role. And I remember he comes back, and I won't play the full clip because it's a long one, but he comes back on SmackDown and he basically asked the fans if they wanted him to be a heel. And it's, go Google it or YouTube it. It's really remarkable because I don't think anyone else could have pulled it off than The Rock. He comes to the ring and he asks several times, "Do you guys want to boo me?" And he gave them several chances. And it was basically, I fully believe it was creative and The Rock saying, "Well, let's see where they want me to go with this. Let's see where they want me to go with this angle." And because The Rock knew that this was his last full-time run with the company, and it was. The winter of 2003 was The Rock's last hurrah in terms of full-time competitiveness in the WWE. And I guess they were just going to give the fans exactly what they want. They weren't going to force-feed them like they've done with Roman Reigns up until just recently. And obviously, the fans wanted nothing to do with The Rock. They knew what was up. They knew he was on his way out to Hollywood. They booed him out of the building at SummerSlam 2002 in favor of a heel Brock Lesnar. So he comes back and they boo him. They say they want to boo him. He understands it and he says, "Well, be careful what you wish for." And he embarks on a full Hollywood heel run. And he has his match with with Hulk Hogan at No Way Out 2003, in another homage to the Montreal Screwjob with Vince McMahon turning out the lights and the crooked referee. Yeah, that was actually held in Montreal. I wasn't there, unfortunately, but I knew people who were. And The Rock gets the second win on Hollywood Hulk Hogan. But that feud and that match was really just to push the Mania match and the Mania program between McMahon and Hulk Hogan at the succeeding WrestleMania at WrestleMania 19. But at the same time that this is going over on SmackDown, because like I said, this is the time of the hard brand split where the rules were not broken. On Raw, we had a returning Stone Cold Steve Austin, who returned at the very same pay-per-view, No Way Out 2003, to take on Eric Bischoff. And this, too, was the last run for Stone Cold Steve Austin. The only difference was is that we didn't really know it. Now, while The Rock never said, this is my final run with the company as a full-time competitor, we kind of knew, okay, this guy's making the full plunge into Hollywood. But for Stone Cold Steve Austin, he never went to Hollywood on a full-time schedule. Yeah, he did The Condemned and The Longest Yard, but he never really made it known that he was going off to do other ventures. We actually thought he was going to come back and have another 2-3 year for run with the company. But he comes back, does that match with Eric Bischoff, and the next night on Monday Night Raw, The Rock shows up. And we're all saying, well, what the hell is he doing here? He has, you know, he's a SmackDown guy, and this is the time of the hard brand split where rules aren't broken. Well, The Rock says that he did Vince McMahon a favor by whooping Hollywood Hulk Hogan's candy ass all over No Way Out. And he asked Vince McMahon to come to Monday Night Raw because he had unfinished business with Stone Cold Steve Austin. And he said that he was going to confront the Rattlesnake there tonight. And he confronts Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he basically says that he's done it all in this business. 7-time WWF champion, 2-time WCW champion, multiple-time Intercontinental champion, Royal Rumble winner, headlined 3 WrestleManias, but he never beat Stone Cold Steve Austin one-on-one at WrestleMania. And this is how this match was built. This match was built as The Rock needing to get that monkey off his back, needing to prove to himself that he could beat the Texas Rattlesnake, that he could be just as good as Stone Cold Steve Austin, because he was 0-2 against Austin at WrestleMania to this point. Austin had beat him both times. And the build to this match doesn't get talked about a lot, but I gotta say, I would argue that it is just as good as the one at WrestleMania 17. And let me give you guys a listen.
7 months ago, I told my boss, Vince McMahon, to take his job and shove it. Steve Austin got tired of sitting on his ass in the house, and everybody said, Austin can take his ball and go home. Stone Cold Steve Austin is back. And God, there he is! I didn't bring a ball with me. I brought a big fat can of whoop ass. I can guarantee you that I am going to raise more hell in this ring than I've ever raised in my life. And that's what we're here for, JR.
The Rock said he was going to confront Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Austin, do you remember the last 2 times you went one on one with the great one? Whipped your ass not once, but twice. Stone Cold, what you don't understand is this. The Rock has done it all in this business.
The 7-time WWE champion. He's a leading man in Hollywood.
Right. The one thing that The Rock has not done is whoop that bald candy ass at WrestleMania. So what do you say, Stone Cold? What do you say?
You say it.
Stone Cold at a WrestleMania.
I want to tell you, face to face.
Man, I would argue that promo package is better than the My Way one. Like, I gotta say, was there any artist better for WWE promo packages and theme songs than Limp Bizkit? I know that he's kind of irrelevant nowadays, but Limp Bizkit, wow, what a job he did with using his songs to relate to WWE. And he actually performed live at that WrestleMania, WrestleMania 19. He sung Rollin' live for The Undertaker's entrance. And that song, Crack Addict, was the theme song, which he performed as well to WrestleMania 19. So there you have it. The Rock needed to beat Stone Cold Steve Austin. He needed to prove to himself, and he did. And in one of the most iconic and memorable moments in WWE history, I remember as soon as The Rock hit the three count, won the match, he immediately broke character. And you see him lean over Stone Cold Steve Austin in the match and thank him. And just, you see that they exchange a heart to heart. And I believe The Rock has alluded to this in past interviews. Stone Cold Steve Austin has talked about it in his documentary about what each of these guys meant to one another in their careers. They very much were the yin to the other's yang. And I gotta say, there will never be another in-ring rivalry like these guys. And, you know, I'm hoping one day there is, but I have yet to see an intense rivalry of two guys on such mega levels as these two were. So, as you know, this was the last match of Stone Cold Steve Austin. He went on about a year-long run as the co-GM slash sheriff of Monday Night Raw, which was awesome in and of itself. The Rock stuck around for another month about, put over Goldberg in his inaugural debut with the WWE. And then he went on his merry way, and these guys did not cross paths until WrestleMania 27, when they bumped into one another backstage. But this really closed the book on what was the best. And you know what? I'm not even going to say in my mind or in my opinion. This was the best rivalry of all time between two superstars, bar none. I will not entertain any other opinions. No, I'm kidding. You guys can come at me with other ones that you think are just as good. Obviously, Taker and Triple H are up there. Triple H and Shawn Michaels, but yeah, I just can't think of one that touches the level of these two guys. But you know what, guys? Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. You can get me on Twitter at ADeMarco25. A few of you guys have already DM'd me with your opinions, and I'm very appreciative of that. You've given me some ideas for future episodes. Or you can email Matt at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Let me know what you guys think. Come at me with ideas, and we will talk next week. You guys take it easy, and see you soon.